Yes, hello. Here it is Thursday, January 25th, and I think I'd like to tell my story, and for one reason, I haven't heard it yet, and for another, I'd like to know how it comes out. Okay, to begin, my name is Ed. I'm an alcoholic. And I want you to know that I come from a dysfunctional home. Because I'm a recovering alcoholic, a bachelor, I live alone. When I first heard those terms, coming from an alcoholic home, a dysfunctional home, I had little or no idea of what they meant. Finally, as I look back, I look at the world around me, I begin to understand more and more. Like all the other things I've heard in AA. For example, when I left the hospital after treatment, I was told no speaking at meetings for 90 days, no major changes in a year. I thought to myself, how childish. Who could they be talking to? And why so arbitrary? Why 90 days? Why a year? Well, now that I'm well past the 90 days, I'm thinking, my God, give me another 90 days. And as far as no changes for a year, I said, good Lord, this is change enough. That's all I can take in 1 year. Seriously, to be dysfunctional, I finally discovered that it does apply to me today. For example, there are certain things that I have problems with. Newspapers. Somehow or other, I can never get rid of newspapers. My friends kid me about it. My children sort of throw up their hands and say, Dad, why do you have all the newspapers lying around? And I say, well, they get thrown out. And they always say, well, yes, but when? I say, well, I have to read them first. You mean you haven't read them? I said, well, I've got to look at them again and read the things I haven't read before. Then I have to say the things that I want to save so that I can read them again some other time. Well, as it turns out, the papers almost never get thrown out until they begin to take over the house. Another thing, I lose things a lot. I live in a small space, small room, two small rooms. I never take anything out of the house, at least not the things that I lose. And yet somehow an envelope here, a bill there, a key, a credit card, somehow it always gets lost. Actually, it's just misplaced. So what happens is that I keep looking for these things. Sometimes I stop what I'm doing. Take apart the house. Look for things. Can't find them. Invariably, months later, everything turns up, usually right where I'd put it, or at least finally I realize that's where I put it. I finally realized that this is all a symptom of dysfunction when last spring, after some time in the early summer, I decided to make a list of all the things that I had lost and needed to find for future use. Papers, bills, letters, keys. And I did that. And then I lost the list. Well, I'm learning. I really need to express my gratitude to all the speakers I've heard at these meetings, speaking here from the podium, and note that a number of them have expressed their reluctance to speak. Some of them have actually apologized for being poor speakers. Some of them have said they didn't have much to say, but I'm here to pass along what you all know, that at least in my experience, I haven't heard anybody speak that didn't have something in some way, in some personal way, to add to the meeting. And there have been many surprises. Once I heard a person stand up and found himself unable to begin, simply stood there before the microphone. When he finally got warmed up, much to my astonishment, he turned out to be the one speaker I could identify with most in all the speakers I heard within a period of many weeks. Well, looking back at my history, the magic number I've heard very often here seems to be the word 13. I didn't start drinking at age 13. In fact, I think I was very much the late bloomer. When I was growing up in the 1940s, in my school years, and as a child in the 30s, I saw drinking, and I saw drunks on the street. And I was aware that there were people sitting on bar stools. It had nothing to do with me. But gradually I became aware that there was a problem, particularly on Saturday nights in my own family. And there would be parties, and there'd be glasses left strewn about that I would wake up and see on a Sunday morning. And I would be sent out to get the 7-Up and the tomato juice, which apparently helped my father get through the recovery period on a Sunday. But it had nothing to do with me. There really wasn't any drinking in my immediate family. And so somehow I was spared all of those early bouts with drinking at home. In fact, I learned to develop a very strong antipathy, a hostility even, towards alcohol and what it did to people, or at least what I thought it did to people. And I said to myself, it's never going to happen to me. I said, I'm never going to end up that way. I said, I'm not going to end up in a bar stool. I said, these people are wasting their lives. And so I went on. And through high school, I tried to be a man for all seasons. I tried to excel. I dabbled in athletics. I studied hard and stayed away from drinking. Even on our summer camping trips during my high school days. No, nobody even thought of bringing a beer. Finally, as I went off to service and got caught up in the world of adults, eventually moving to the New York City area, I met some friends who were, I thought, more sophisticated. And they invited me to cocktail parties. And finally, bit by bit, finally, gradually, I sort of agreed to sample something called a martini. And this was a great ritual, and it was a great indoctrination. And I can still remember martini as a kind of social medicine, tasted like medicine. And I don't remember the initial reaction, except that after a while, it was pretty bad. Those first martinis led to first drunk, the first spinning rooms, the first throwing up, the first hangover. It scared me, and I tried to stay away from that. I dreaded it. I didn't want to repeat it. So throughout my 20s, throughout the 1950s, I kept an arm's length from drinking, except for perhaps an occasional stop at the college tavern, an occasional beer with a school chum. Again, not thinking about drinking. Finally, came time to get married. And my marriage was a little stressful at first because I had to live apart from my young wife. And I met some people as I was living alone while married who enjoyed drinking. And I sort of thought that was a nice substitute for what I was not getting in my marriage satisfaction. And I started. And finally, I began to develop a taste. And that, I believe, is when my progression began. And over a period of about 25 years, more or less, the progression began to take its toll. There were periods in which I really and totally went blotto. There were times when I began to realize that what all I wanted to do was to drink. That effect Okay. I became a solitary drinker. And when I became single, I got my first apartment. I decided that my solitary drinking needed to be fancy. I set up a bar. I love to have the glasses, all the little implements that one has at a bar, the ice buckets, the bottles, the collection, the glasses, the cocktail displays. All of that was part of my proud furnishings. Time went on. My solitary drinking began to turn to daily drinking. And bit by bit, the cocktail glasses were put on the shelf. The ice bucket was tossed away or put in a box. The cocktail swizzle sticks somehow disappeared. The array of different kinds of booze somehow or other turned out to be a single bottle of vodka. Eventually, the olives, the lemon twist disappeared. Eventually, I didn't even bother with the ice cube tray. I stopped throwing out and paring down my habit of embellishing my drinking with just sticking to the bottle and the glass. Then, of course, the daily drinking became intensified when instead of having a drink, looking forward to a drink after work, I began looking forward to a drink at lunchtime. And I began to find excuses for leaving work as early as possible to go out and drink. And I began going to a bar to drink. And after the bar, I would come home and continue to drink. After a while, I began to wake up in the morning and look forward to the afternoon. And finally, at the end, there was no difference between morning and afternoon and evening. I would wake up in the middle of the night, check the time, walk around, go to the kitchen, for no reason other than just sheer force of the disease. I'd fix a drink, sip it, down it, and go back to sleep. Finally, not too many years ago, I became a victim of a drunk driving, in which my car decided to engage a tree, and the victor of that contest is still standing and growing somewhere on a street in Brookline. The car is long since gone. Another time, the drunk driver cost me a great deal of money, a great deal of lost time, and a great deal of mental anguish. In both cases, the drunk driver was me. Thank God nobody else was injured or hurt or suffered other than through my suffering. It came around to the summer of June of 88. The occasion was my mother's 80th birthday. It was a big occasion, and we had planned for a year a big family outdoor gathering, complete with outdoor festivities, a limo-driven antique, or a chauffeur-driven, rather, antique car to bring the happy lady to her party, and, of course, lots and lots of fun, food, outdoor pool, and lots of drinking. I can remember to this day getting together with my brothers and certainly with my own conscience and saying, my God, I've got to cut down on the drinking, because we had planned a ceremony in which there would be speeches, testimonials, and so forth, which would occur later in the afternoon. I certainly wanted to be in good shape to give my little speech. Well, the thing that was interesting was that we all had a good time, we all did our drinking, we all made our speeches. The entire affair was videotaped. So with a somewhat clearer head later on, I had a chance to see the whole performance. It was a typical family gathering, and it was a typical kind of boozy, happy-go-lucky crowd, having fun, drinking beer, and sort of making fools of themselves. Just about everybody was in a similar state of silliness. And being the oldest son, I was designated, but the time came to make the final wrap-up speech. And there I saw myself, like the others, having had a good time, drank as much as I felt I could, and standing in front of the crowd speaking. And somehow I made it through that speech, but what I saw on the videotape was somebody who had drunk more than they needed to drink. I saw somebody who had to stop speaking because he had drank too much. It was me. When it came time for me to turn my life around and get to AA, I want to say that the whole thing for me was as easy as crossing the street in my neighborhood. In fact, I've crossed that street hundreds upon hundreds of times. And as the years went by and I kept drinking, I would cross that street very often pretty sloshed. And I began to take exception to people who were annoying me, particularly people who would violate parking regulations, people who would double park during the rush hour, most particularly drivers who would block the crosswalk. As it turned out, I had a close friend who was handicapped and needed that crosswalk. I began to express my anger to the people on the street. I began to engage them in confrontation. It finally came to a head when, at one point, my remarks were interpreted by someone to be racist. That person followed me into the local supermarket and proceeded to slug me. Some of these incidents were observed. Some of them were reported to friends. And ultimately, out of a clear blue sky, I walked into an office at my place of employment and suddenly found myself facing, just like the old television show, This Is Your Life, a group of people who were confronting me with my life. I experienced crisis intervention. I want to say that it was an experience that I certainly will not have again, but it was certainly one I'll never forget. I knew immediately when I had walked in and saw the faces that were looking at me. Some of the expressions on their faces were apprehensive. I found out later that they were very, very unsure of how I would react. I felt disoriented, surprised, a little betrayed because I'd been tricked into coming to that meeting. But before it was over, I felt that my time had come, and I agreed, and that was the issue, that the time for treatment, the time for doing something, was now. And within a matter of hours, arrangements had been made. And from that point on, and able to say, here I am, into the program and beginning what I hope will be a very, very happy recovery. I can only speak for my life up to this point because I feel my recovery is just beginning.